Oh, that's right. We're right back here, and as promised, I do have the one and only Congressman Jeff Duncan on the line with us. How you doing today, Jeff?
Well, Ann, I am doing great. Other than being in Washington this week, I am doing fine. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love. I'm glad I'm the one and only one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you are. You know, one of the fun things we're doing on the radio now, I just want to share, we're doing, I'm doing auctions on Saturday morning. We do them live on the radio, and we post them on Facebook. I just want to know, if I need a fill-in auctioneer, can I give you a call?
You can give me a call, and we'll say, hey, now, what do you get for it? Who's a minute? 25 to 35 to 45, 55 to 65. We can do it.
Okay. All right. That sounds really great. But, gosh, a lot has been happening up there in Washington, D.C. I know you now have a new Speaker of the House. What do you think? Are you pleased with Paul Ryan?
Well, you know, we settled on Paul. There were a lot of us that were responsible for helping, you know, move along the leadership change. And ultimately, we had to find someone we felt like we could work with to move the ball forward from a conservative standpoint and really push back against the Obama administration's policies. There has not been enough fight up here. One of the things I've talked about for a very, very long time is that this place operates on crisis, where we wait to the very deadline to actually bring up the big issues of debt ceiling increases or spending bills. And when they wait to the deadlines, then they can use words like default or shutdown or fiscal cliff to not only scare members of Congress, but also scare the American people. And what results is we end up having to vote on something that we normally would not vote on, and they're able to cram something through. Historically, it's been something that Harry Reid has said, this is the only thing that will pass the Senate. And that's been the only bill that we've been presented. So in our conversations with Paul Ryan, and we have an understanding that he really gets the root cause of the discontent here in Washington and what led to Speaker Boehner's demise. And that is, we're not acting early enough. And by not acting early enough, we're not voting on bills that really reflect the principles, values, morals, and convictions, the things we tell the voters we're going to run on and we're going to do when we get here. We're not able to do that because we have something crammed down our throat. So Paul understands that if we act early enough and we vote on legislation out of the House, the only thing we control is the House, we vote on things that actually reflect those core principles, and we send that bill to the Senate, and we do it early enough, then we can engage the American people. Paul Ryan has said our communication is terrible, and I couldn't agree more. I've said, you know, our communication is terrible from the first month I was here. We were terrible communicators from the conference. And he said, I'll be the communicator. And he went on five Sunday talk shows this week. He's already done an op-ed in the USA Today, I think today or yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to communicate. If we communicate what we're doing in the House, we do it early enough, we communicate to the American people, then we engage the American people to assist us in this. I call it a home field advantage. And then we can engage them to actually put pressure on the Senate to either get over their 60-vote filibuster rule and get a piece of legislation to the floor. The American people can do that. I can't do that. So, I'm encouraged. I'm optimistic.
You're optimistic. You know, though, one of the things that Paul said, and he may have good reason for it, but I do not really understand why he says we're not even going to touch immigration because the president can't be trusted. You know, that's kind of scary because we're not closing off our southern borders. We've got the Syria people coming in, the resettlement. I know that's something you've been very concerned about. So how do we control this if we won't even bring up an attempt to have some legislation of things that we should be doing to protect our country?
Well, listen to what Paul said. He said we're not going to bring up comprehensive immigration reform, which is what the Democrats and the president want. He did not mention the border. He is for a secure border. He is for interior enforcement. What he's saying is we're not going to deal with the big Gang of Eight immigration, comprehensive immigration bill. We're not going to deal with anything along those lines that would give the president any sort of veto power or momentum on the immigration debate. But I do believe we will deal with more border security. We'll continue to try to address what operational control means. We'll continue to try to build more fencing and include money where appropriate. Chairman McCall, Michael McCall from Texas, chairman of Homeland Security Committee, has a border security bill. I don't like it as it's written. I voted for it in committee because he's my chairman and we were trying to make it better. We're going to continue trying to make it better if it does come to the floor. But a border security bill, which actually defines operational control, puts more assets on the border, builds more fencing, uses 21st century technology, and also has or will have an interior enforcement component, which we didn't have jurisdiction over in Homeland Security. That is a judiciary issue. But before that bill comes to the floor, it will have an interior enforcement component to try to force the executive branch of government to actually enforce the laws that are currently on the books and quit ignoring their constitutional duty to actually enforce the laws that Congress passes.
Okay. So that means we will possibly...
Well, I don't know that bill's got some... It's a legislative process. That bill's got some work to come to the floor. So that addresses border security. That addresses interior enforcement. But it does not touch the amnesty issue. It does not touch the guest worker program. It does not touch an area that I think we need to, and Paul has talked about this in his book and openly about the need for a biometric entry-exit visa system where we know when people come into the country and we know when those people leave. And it addresses interior enforcement and entry-exit system addresses the visa overstay issue, which 49% of all illegals in this country, they came with a permission slip or a visa
right into
this country and just decided to stay. We're not chasing footprints in the desert. We know who these people are. We've got a lot of information on them. And Paul recognizes that and has talked openly about the visa overstay issue. So I anticipate if we do anything on immigration issues, then it won't deal with amnesty. It won't deal with guest worker program. It might deal with more border security, and I hope it does. He will continue to try to force the president to actually enforce the laws. And I anticipate us to continue working on this visa overstay and entry-exit system so we know when people come into the country and leave the country.
Okay. Well, that's a start anyways. Now, what about this budget, though? I know a lot of people, and I know you voted against the budget, but this has pretty much tied our hands, hasn't it?
Well, it's indicative of the problems we faced in Washington for almost 5 years now, and that's that we ran up against a deadline. And in this case, it was a debt ceiling deadline, a default deadline. And it's interesting to note that we hit our debt ceiling on March 15th. And Secretary Liu used extraordinary measures to fund government. That means he borrowed from ourselves. He failed to pay money into pension funds and some other payables that he was required to pay. He failed to do that and use that money to fund government. That's why you saw, as soon as the debt ceiling deal went through, you saw our debt spike about $339 billion dollars immediately because he had to repay all those funds that he used from March 15th till now. And I've got a bill, Mark Sanford's bill, I'm a co-sponsor on it. I had an amendment for the budget bill we just passed trying to stop that extraordinary measure process, and we're going to start pushing that a little bit harder. But so we ran up against a deadline, and a budget deal and a CR, a long-term spending bill, were crafted by Speaker Boehner and a handful of others without general member input. They did it, so to speak, behind closed doors, and a bill was filed late at night that was voted on 2 days later. And it's the wrong way to govern. It's something that we've pushed back against since I got here, since H.R. 1 in March of 2011. And it's something Paul Ryan has talked about. This is the wrong way to govern. It stinks, and we're not going to do that anymore. And
but
we're going to hold
done.
His feet to the fire.
But it's done. For this round, it's done.
Yeah, he voted for the bill. Now, I don't know why I haven't had that conversation with Paul. I think that's a question for the conservative media to ask him. And I'm going to ask him. When I get a chance to sit down with him, what was his thought process there? I wish he would have voted against it. It would have been a symbolic vote because that bill passed by a tremendous number of Republicans, 76 Republicans, and then the rest of the Democrats, but it was a tremendous number. It only takes 218. It was well above 218. So I want to ask Paul that. Here's a guy who wrote budgets in the past, who's Ways and Means Chairman. He may have seen some things in there that he liked, and, you know, I don't know. But at the end of the day, we've got to move forward beyond that. That was the last strike of John Boehner, and he's no longer the speaker. We've got to move forward. We've got to move forward working with Paul Ryan as speaker, which we all came to the conclusion that he's an honest broker and that we can talk to him. We can actually work with him to move the ball forward He's a heck of a lot more conservative than the policies of John Boehner have been.
Okay. All right. So between now and 2017, though, this is what we're locked into.
It is. There's going to be some policy issues. My understanding is we're going to have an omnibus bill, which is a policy direction on how some of these dollars are spent. Not, it doesn't change the amount, but we can direct some of the money. I understand that. That may happen in December, and that'll probably be the first big test for Paul Ryan. But we are locked in on not having an ability to raise the debt ceiling or address debt. We're locked in on spending numbers. Unless we do something different to change that, which we make the laws here. One Congress can't bind the hands of a future Congress, so we could go back and change some of that, assuming we could get it through the House and Senate and the President signed it. That's the most difficult part with President Obama still there.
Exactly.
So we've got to figure out where we can find victories, Anne, between now and next November, Republican victories, so that these guys running and ultimately our nominee can point to some victories and see the movement in the Republican-controlled Congress and tell America, this is how we're going to govern, this is what we're going to do, see the momentum we already have started with the House and Senate. If we have a Republican president, we can sign those bills and continue this momentum to get America back on track, to put Americans to work, because you and I both know, and everyone listening to us know, we have people in our Sunday school or people in our small groups or people that we just know or maybe members of our family that have not been able to find a job, or they've taken a job just to try to make ends meet that's a lot less than what they were making or the potential that they have. We need to get America back on track. And we do that with good tax policy. We do that with addressing our spending addiction here in Washington. We do that with rolling back a lot of these regulations that we've seen out of the Obama administration that is hampering businesses' ability to create jobs. We've got to try to address Obamacare and hopefully roll that back, put more free market principles in there. I get a call pretty much every week or a Facebook message or something where somebody got a notice from their insurance company that now their insurance premium have gone up $200 or $300 a month. That's real money out of their pocket that they don't have to spend in the economy. I thought premiums were supposed to go down. I thought the cost of health care was supposed to go down. We're seeing across America that the opposite is in effect, so we have got to address that. Obama's not going to sign that. But the next president, hopefully a Republican president, will need to address that, and we need to offer him or her some choices on legislation that actually gets to their desk and rolls back Obamacare. So everything I'm talking about is how we as Republicans can stimulate the economy, give Americans more money in their pocket to spend, lessen the tax burden, cut spending in Washington, and address our burgeoning debt, which is endangering our future generations. One thing Paul Ryan said, and last thing I'll say on this, one thing Paul Ryan said on his speech on the House floor the other day is we've got to address paying back our debt. It's the first time I've heard a leader in Washington talk about not just a balanced budget, not about stopping our debt. He actually talked about paying back our debt. And that's something you and I've talked about, is how do we get a balanced budget where we build surpluses and use those surpluses not to spend money, but actually start paying back some of this debt to our creditors.
Well, you know, I agree with you, Jeff, I don't really want to belabor this point much more, but, you know, you've had 2 out of 3 ain't bad there with the House and the Senate, and a lot of people are really disappointed in what has come out of Washington since the last election.
And they should be. They've got every right to be. That led to the downfall of John Boehner no longer being Speaker. I firmly believe that. We have a Senate that will not change their rules to bring Republican bills to the floor. Harry Reid is still in control, blocking through the modern filibuster rule, requiring 60 votes over in the Senate for a bill to make it to the floor. These modern filibuster rules, I must tell you, do not require a senator to go stand on the floor and filibuster as Strom Thurmond had to do for 48 hours. They can just put their name on the bill and say, I'm filibustering this, and then go across the street to Charlie Palmer's and have a steak, and they don't have to do a dang thing. We need to change those rules in the Senate to where one senator can't stop the process, which is what we're seeing, and they can actually move to get legislation to the floor. What's happening is Republican legislation is being hampered. If we could, bills that pass the House, and we passed a lot of legislation this year, if we could get those to the Senate floor and they could vote on them and actually send bills to the president's desk and force him to either sign them or veto them, I think America would see a strong dichotomy between progressive governance under the Obama administration and what Republicans would do if we had a Republican president, these bills would actually be signed into law. The Senate is the stopgap right now. They're keeping anything from happening. And Harry Reid did it for 4 years, and Mitch McConnell's failure to lead over there and get over this 60-vote filibuster rule has hampered the process since January.
Yeah, it's just.
And Americans have every right to be frustrated, and I'll tell you, I join them. I'm frustrated.
Absolutely. Well, you know, on some of the other issues that are out there, you know, one of the things that I keep hearing through our jewelry business is that we are not supporting Israel. In fact, things are getting cut being sent over there. Do you know anything about what's happening with Israel, our ally?
Yeah, the Obama administration continues to snub its nose at our friend and ally Israel, and they try to meddle in the process to try to create 1967 borders or really force a two-state solution. Excuse me. But one thing Netanyahu has said over and over, Israel is sitting down at the table with the Palestinians to create a two-state solution as soon as the Palestinians recognize Israel's right to exist. That's all they have to do is recognize that Israel has the right to exist, and then the negotiation will move forward. And the Palestinians are unwilling to do that. They're unwilling to recognize Israel's right to exist. In fact, they continue to send missiles and suicide bombers and people with knives and hatchets and everything else into Israel to create acts of terror. And so Israel really was shunned in the whole Iran nuclear deal process.
Mm-hmm.
Iran now will have $150 billion in sanctions relief to export terrorism or fund and finance Hezbollah and Hamas to continue attacking Israel as well as Americans anywhere they may be. Iran's responsible for terrorism all over the globe. Iran will have a nuclear weapon in 10 years or less. And Israel was not even consulted in this P5+1 agreement. In fact, we snubbed our nose at them. And so now you see the Saudis and the Egyptians and the Jordanians and the Emirates all start talking to Israel about missile defense and about how they can possibly work together against the Iranian-Persian threat that even the Arab countries feel.
Yeah, I just think that this is so wrong. I mean, I understand that we're not even sending the supplies and everything that we should be sending to Israel to be able to defend themselves.
Well, that's not because Congress doesn't want to. That's not because Congress hasn't put the money there or authorized it. It's because the Barack Obama administration and the State Department under John Kerry failed to recognize Israel's needs and recognize what Congress has done to try to support Israel. So I put the onus and the burden and the responsibility directly on this administration for our failures with regard to our friends Israel.
What's your personal feeling about where this is all going to end up with Iran?
You know, we're trying to stop the sanctions relief. We don't believe that the president has the ability to lift congressional sanctions. Only Congress can do that. So there's a court filing right now to try to clarify that. So we're just trying to stop more bad from happening. We don't want to see Iran get $150 billion in sanctions relief, money they can use to buy missile technology or money they can use to finance terrorism. So we're trying to stop that. I'm amazed that so many of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle embraced this P5+1 Iran agreement of the administration's, fully understanding that Iran's going to get $150 billion, that Iran will get a nuclear weapon and be part of the nuclear club and a dangerous actor as part of the nuclear club at some point in time. And it threatens Israel right now because they have the technology to reach Israel with a long-range rocket. But it also gives them the ability to buy ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile technology. They don't need that technology to hit Iran or Saudi Arabia. They need that technology to hit, you know, Western Europe or America, the United States and the North American continent with a nuclear warhead. And they will have the ability to buy that with the kind of money that we're going to unleash to them with the sanctions relief. So we're just trying to stop it and use any tool that we have to stop it.
And when is this money supposed to be released?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's not going to be released until the court decides. The Obama administration would assume it be released today.
Right.
Congress, since it's a lot of it's congressional sanctions, not administrative sanctions, their congressional sanctions. My understanding is he can't just arbitrarily lift those, even signing an agreement, because he didn't have power over congressional sanctions, and we're not going to release those. So it's in the court right now, and I really don't have an answer for you when that may or may not happen. I just know that what we're trying to do is stop it any way we can.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we got to talk a little bit about how this election process is shaping up. Any candidate or candidates out there that you're looking at, Jeff, and saying this looks pretty interesting or might be somebody I can get behind?
You know, there's a great quality, qualified field of Republican candidates, and I'm meeting with all of them. In fact, I just saw Ted Cruz, Bobby Jindal, and Mike Huckabee this weekend. So continuing conversations. Ted Cruz has reached out to me this week, wants to go to breakfast and sit down. Rand Paul's guys reached out to me yesterday. So I'm really like every other American, looking at who I think could be the leader that can work with the Congress and move America in the right direction from Jeff Duncan's perspective. You know, what is the right direction? The right direction is controlling our spending and paying back debt and reining in the size and scope of government, unleashing that entrepreneurial and innovative spirit that we've got in America, that understanding that Americans can create jobs and put other Americans to work, and it's not the government. And so the candidate that actually does that is the one that's going to get my support. A lot of them are talking about some of those things, but I'm looking for a more complete package. And whether that person's Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or Carly Fiorina or Mike Huckabee or Ben Carson or whoever is the person that's going to get my vote. So I'm not there yet. I'm like a lot of Americans, but I'm getting closer.
You're getting closer.
Getting closer.
What do you think about what do you think about the fact that the phenomenal power of the non-politicians in this race, Donald Trump, Ben Carson, what do you think about how they're doing and how they're attracting people?
Well, I mean, I think it's very indicative of how people feel about Washington. There's a lot of distrust in Washington, and it's rightly placed. There's a lot of people that don't want to see anyone that's been in politics and give them a chance. So, you know, it's not surprising to me. What I think it ought to be a wake-up call for the people that are in Washington right now, and that's the leadership that I serve under, and Mitch McConnell and others. They need to take note that, you know, the people that are leading in the polls are people that aren't establishment Republicans, that aren't, you know, going along to get along. They're actually pushing the envelope and challenging the status quo and talking about new and fresh ideas and talking about rolling back government and getting government out of the way. And America's gravitating toward that. So instead of the establishment here in Washington beating up guys like Donald Trump or Ben Carson or Carly Fiorina and even Ted Cruz, who is seen as a Washington outsider, instead of beating them up, that'll be listening. Open their ears and listen to what they're saying and figure out how we can embrace some of that and create policies here based on what they're saying, because what they're saying is resonating with the American people, and that's who we work for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that point. I think they should wake up and look at this. Well, I'm going to ask you, I'm sure, are you running next time?
I am. I'm filing for re-election, and filing is in March, so I am running for re-election. Still got a lot of work to do. I'd love to do a little work up here with the Republican in the White House.
Well, I know. Hey, listen, I appreciate you taking time with us here this morning, and I suppose you'd like to say a word since Veterans Day is right here with us. Wouldn't you like to say a word to our veterans?
Ask me that one more time.
I said, wouldn't you like to say a word to our veterans since Veterans Day is coming up next week?
I would. Look, thank you. From the bottom of our hearts, from our whole district and my family and everyone in the listening base, everyone that I know of, is very, very thankful for what the men and women who have served in our nation's military, oftentimes off in foreign lands, fighting for wars that we don't always understand, but they gave it their all because that was their duty. And we are so thankful because our liberty, our freedom, our way of life is directly tied to their efforts. And we're not going to forget that. And if there's any way that my office, me personally, can help a veteran with this bureaucratic mess that we've got or anything they need, we would love to do that. That's something that we take pride in doing. And, again, just let me say thank you to everyone that has served and also to all the active duty military men and women and the families that support them back home. Thank you for what you do. God bless you.
Thank you, Jeff Duncan, for calling us this morning. It's nice to talk to you.
Absolutely, and thank you.
All right.
Take care.
You have a good one. Bye-bye.